up. But the bloom, honorable bloom, is with the Select Committee on Cooperative Governance and Judicial Affairs, that is clashing with this committee. Committee's meeting. Honorable Makubela, is with the Committee on Land and Environmental Affairs. Honorable Zulu, must his flight from Devon. We must buy him a clock, that he can set the clock 2 hours in advance. That is apologies, can we accept the apologies? Two members are attending other meetings, the third one is missed his flight. Honorable Nguni said he will join us. He's from the Free State province, and Honorable Mopsisi I haven't heard of. Thank you, all the members. That brings us to the annual report of DBSA. Since we only met last in 2009, I want to ask the members present to introduce themselves as well as the officials. There were a few changes. And then the bank will introduce themselves, led by the CEO. Myself, Charles de Beer, from the Northern Cape, the biggest province in South Africa.
Thanks, Chairperson. It's Linus Mashile from Kumala, where the sun rises.
Good morning. My name is Eric Chan.
Good morning. My name is Jack Becker. I'm from the Western Cape.
Good morning. My name is Simon Mwang. I'm a researcher for the Select Committee on Finance.
Good morning. Elana Chazos, researcher for the Select Committee on Appropriations. Estelle Greenwald, committee section.
Morning. Johnny Connery Stevens, committee assistant.
Rolandika Kendo, committee secretary.
Mr. Malloy, you may introduce your team. And then proceed on page 4. The Minister of Finance says the DBSA must redefine their roles as government delivery agents. With that as background, you can, after your introduction, then kick off with this. Just received an email. The Deputy Minister for Finance of Nene indicated that last week already that he will be present. And I've just received an email due to an unexpected death in his family. He will not be able to attend. Our condolences and sympathy to the Deputy Minister. Ask the Secretary that we also convey it in writing to him. That's bad news. Thank you,
Chairman, and the members of the committee. I think we are pleased that we have finally
you very much. My name is Lefenza Radikiledi. I'm the director at the European Finance Institution. And next to me is Shimi Mpave. He's working with me as our senior financial analyst. Thanks.
Lindile Batwa, National Treasury, Liaison Office of Parliament.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Let me begin, Chairman and members, by just giving the context to our presentation. Ideally, I think if we'd had an ill opportunity, I would have done this much earlier, but I think it's equally opportune for us to be speaking to you now about the performance in the previous year. The Chairman did also indicate that it will be interesting for us to give you our response to the Minister's challenge on EBSA redefining itself. I'm going to attempt to do that when we finish giving you the results for the previous year, giving you context. But I think last week or week before, we made a formal presentation to the Standing Committee on the redefined EBSA, as you speak, which was a bit more detailed, which is contained in our corporate plan. And you know, I think we'd be happy to make that available for you to have a better context, but I'll give you a sense of what where GBSA is going and what is changing.
You can incorporate that in your presentation as well.
Okay.
It's got enough time.
All right. I think, let me begin by saying the results are not necessarily reflective of the new GBSA. They're still largely reflective of GBSA as the committee has known it. Having said that, I think 2 years ago we did our own analysis of the environment within which we're operating, and two factors that we focused on were the global financial crisis being the one factor, and the other factor was the effect of the political resolution, the new executive of government coming to play in terms of what their demands are going to be on institutions such as DBSA. I'm happy to report that in both instances, I think we were spot on in terms of understanding the impact of the financial consequences along with the consequences on the organization itself and its ability to perform. But more importantly, we were very predictive in what we thought the new Australian government will be looking for. In both instances, we then embarked on re-engineering literally the organization, which brought us into a new strategy, which I'm happy to say that has now been launched. And some of those things that we are now doing, I will cover later on. So what we're giving you is a history based on our performance within the context of the global financial crisis and also some settled, most of the government departments with whom we are operating. I'm aware that you have asked there that we also provide you with the position on our flagship program, Tenta Mache, which we will cover in substance tomorrow. But today we'll give you a sense of what we do within Tenta Mache as part of the context for tomorrow's discussion. We have again, I think just for the sake of good order, I'm going to begin by giving you a sense of what DBSA is supposed to be doing or its context at the moment. Just bring
Chair, honorable members. Chair, as indicated on the slide, since Alangi is now deployed in 199 municipalities, which is an increase from the 172 that we reported at the end of 08-09 financial year. As indicated on the slide, since the major municipalities are significantly B3 and B4 low capacity municipalities, which are mainly project consolidated, rural nodes, as well as Izimbizo municipalities, which were identified by the President.
Excuse me, you said from 72 to how many?
It's from 172 to 199. 172 at the end of 08-09 financial year, and 199 in 9-10. Chair, the total number of deployees also increased from 97 in 06-07 to 511 in 08-09, and to about 614 in 09-10. The year-on-year increase has been driven mainly by the recruitment and deployment of artisans in the preparation for the rollout of the Municipal Infrastructure Operations and Maintenance Program. But here we also experienced a decline in the number of young professionals, and this was due to absorption as permanent employees in the municipalities, which is in line with our initial young professional retention policy to build capacity in low capacity municipalities. As members of the committee will see, the technical employees comprise 68% of the deployed experts, and this is in line with our national priority of addressing the eradication of infrastructure backlogs. Chair, the MIG release and expenditure have been doubling year on year, and this is in line with the increase in the Division of Revenue Act allocation to Sinzamani municipalities, but it's also in line with the increase in our deployment and the number of municipalities supported. The growth in MIG expenditure is also, on the other hand, Chair, due to the increase in the number of bulk water and sanitation projects implemented by deployees, carrying huge MIG and CAPEX expenditure budgets. These were mostly in Gauteng, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal provinces. Chair, in terms of the Vulindlela Academy training program, the total number of delegates trained almost doubled also year on year, as indicated on the slide. 67% of the delegates that were trained were referred by our deployees from Sinzamanje municipalities, which is depicting a consistently increasing alignment between the programs and the academy, but also an increased outreach to Sinzamanje municipalities by the Vulindlela Academy. Record Chair, the number of delegates trained in the SADC region increased by almost 400% year on year, indicating an acceleration in donor-funded training through the Pan-African Capacity Building Program, which is a partnership between the DBSA, AFD, the Development Bank of France, as well as the Industrial Development Corporation. And this also depicts our increased use of technical assistance grants to support our international division investment portfolio. Thanks, Chair. I will hand over to the CFO.
Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. This is Michael Sandler. I'm just going to focus very briefly, go back one slide, on the financials and the highlights. Before I continue, what is contained in the annual report, we did see for this year to review the first signs of the economic conditions, especially the change in the economic conditions. We saw, as the Treasury is referred to, as a normalization of the interest rate curves, where we found that short-term interest rates are substantially lower than long-term interest rates. And we also found heightened activity of commercial banks in the sector because they were sitting with excess liquidity. What the slide depicts is that the bank's financial activity in three sectors. The top would be the municipal infrastructure grant that my colleague referred to had been unblocked as a result of the bank's interventions. The bottom section, blue, was the actual direct disbursement investments that the bank has made, which reflects on its balance sheet. And then the middle section is really the money that exits the income statement by way of costs on a non-recovery basis. Here you'll see that the disbursement, the municipal infrastructure grant, as my colleague had said, it has been increased by some 80-odd%. We did find, though, that the disbursement investment levels remain stable, been down slightly, and this is clearly reflective of two issues. The one is the economic conditions of municipalities. For example, the public sector themselves were struggling to actually take up loans themselves to afford it, and we had to spend quite a lot of time in the next financial year to enhance them to assist municipalities. So therefore, even though it was still at 8.3, which is significantly higher than historical levels at the bank. And I'll go over to more detail in that just now. Just on the middle section, Chair, you'll see 550 million rand is money that really exits the bank from the income statement. Now, members will recall that the bank does not pay dividends and also does not pay tax. And the agreement is that that money will be utilized. Our target is to now try and spend 45%, but in fact, 66% of our sustainable earnings in this money in interventions that exit our income statement. Just a brief, quick split up, which is contained in the annual report of that 550. 60% plus is spent on the local government in terms of money structures. A further 25% of it is capacity building, and the balance of 15% is really in the research and the grant area. If we move on, if one just looks at the analysis of the loan book, Chair, one will see that the loan book is still predominantly focused on the municipalities, which makes up 50%. Other public sector and state-owned enterprises makes up 24%, so 75% of the book still focused on the public sector, with a balance really on partnerships in private intermediary sectors as well. We, one can see on the right-hand side here, the focus is still on the mandates within the bank. If one looks at the left-hand pie chart, one can see here that 67% of the book is still focused on social investment in terms of the sectors. One adds up those sectors, and then 33% focused on energy, transport, and the economic sector. If we move on to it, one can see on the left-hand side, in terms of the financial position of the bank, the assets grew by roughly 12%, income-earning assets, the loans grew by about 13%. So the bank is finished the year and continued into the 2011 on in an extremely robust position. The non-performing loans at 4.9%, down from 5.4%, so it's still way within the industry. In fact, it's better than any bank. And then impairment ratio is sitting at about 2.3%. So the state of the book itself is still well managed. The indication of the bank manages its book. If you move on to the next one, Chair, well, it's just an indication. The profit itself is 963 million. Again, it was down from the previous year because of unrealized revaluations. Again, reflective of the downward turn of the equity market and the financial market at large. Sustainable earnings, however, was maintained at 823. Here, I think it's important to note here that sustainable earnings is targeted from a sustainability point of view. And given that 823, 65% is still, as we said, 60-odd% is still spent exiting after the 823. In terms of the interventions. In terms of cost management, the bank has actually spent quite a lot, and we've focused on our costs, and we've remained with, way within our limit of 45%, at 40.5%. So the actual level of expenditures remains well managed within the bank. Thank you, Chair. I'll hand over to my colleague.
I think just to enable the members to comment on it, it might be opportune to take questions purely on the results, and then we can then come back on the way forward, and then I'll then do that aspect of it as well.
Thank you.
turning to page 14, on the right-hand side at the bottom, at the back, you have to put into clearer perspective the challenges and the opportunities faced by the bank and its stakeholders. This has raised some key questions. Now, we would like you to respond to this. What is your challenges and your key questions to go forward in terms of the new organizational structure, whatever you're going to give us? That's page 14. Right, tomorrow we will deal with the rest. Honorable members, questions? Honorable Mashile? Anyone else? Honorable Kuni? Okay, Honorable Mashile, we stop.
Thank you, Jefferson. There are a couple of questions which I just need some clarity. And I think I have heard that there was a decline in the young professionals. I'm not sure whether the decline in young professionals is within the industry or within DBSA itself or within the municipality. A condition. Is the decline you are referring to the professionals in the DBSA that you are deploying to municipality? Do you know where they are? I'm interested to know whether you know where they are. And then also just a little bit of an explanation, because there is an indication, I think, that some 6.8 billion over the 4 years or so has not been spent. Has not been spent. You unlocked 15 billion, but then you have spent 8.9 billion or something like that. What is the problem? Is it the capacity of DBSA, or is it systems problems of municipalities? Where lies the problem? And then the third question is this voluntary training. I think there is almost like 11,000 or so trainees. Who are they? Are they engineers? Are they technicians? Are they financial officers? Who are they? Because one wants to know the level at which these municipalities that we are engaged with climb the ladder of development. And if one doesn't know, we are just simply training counselors to understand that takes us forward. I just want to know this. And then also, the last question. Do you lend money to poor municipalities? Or just diplomatically to say, what are your criteria of actually lending infrastructure loans to municipalities? Are poor municipalities also part of the people that you are assisting with development finance? Then, if that is the case, how many municipalities over these 4 years have we turned around? Actually, how many municipalities that can continue without DBSA today? Same thing.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I came in late, so I don't know what was the agreement about today's questions and tomorrow. However, I just ask my questions as the culture person, because I think that is not what you agreed upon. My first question, Chairperson, is on the purpose of the bank itself. I just want to find out from the bank what is its main objective, or what is its the red tape that is there. I just don't know how are they going to deal with the issue of the 200 million rand that is supposed to develop SMEs, because there's so much red tape in the DSA that I foresee SMEs falling by the wayside, just waiting for funding from DSA. Because from previous experience, at local government level, we ended up giving up getting funds from DSA because we waited for 4 years. Each time there'll be workshops, there'll be books written, reports written, but there's no funding at all. I just want to know how far the DSA moved from that culture to the current situation, where we need, as you said, we want to make a remittal state. And in the remittal state, I think red tape is one of the issues that need to be dealt with away. My second question, Chairperson, is on the restructuring. I do not know how far they've got the restructuring. The question is, what are the implications of the restructuring? What impact do they have on on cost implications, and were any retrenchments on the restructuring when we went to restructuring? Looking at its goals, the Chairperson, I see that they are dealing with a lot of things. In this slide, I see they'll be dealing with the developmental state conferences on education, comprehensive rural development program, PPP for health, and so forth. It seems they are the jack of all trades. They don't zoom into some issues and deal with those issues. Which also goes back to the first question, now what they are copies with. When looking at that test book, 75% of your debt book is to public institutions or to public from the public from the public sector. I just want to know, Chairperson, in your debt book, how much have you written off so far? Or what's the policy if municipalities, because it is about 50% is municipalities, what do you do where the municipality is unable to pay due to because of it, cannot generate any revenue, or where it can generate revenue because people are so poor in that they can't pay for services and so forth. What is your strategy as far as municipalities or public entities that are unable to pay? How do you recover costs? I'll go to that one.
Thank you, Guni. In the annual report, mention is made about the performance of the year in review and the achievements that were accomplished. Many municipal infrastructure grants were released and rose by 21% from 14.6 million in the previous year to 17.7 million during the year in review. Bank indicate to the committee the names and places where these projects have been completed, where you engage in projects, what has been completed, what has not been completed. And also your interventions in 199 municipalities, 18 provincial and national departments, that you give us a report on this. Where did you intervene, these 199 municipalities? Which are they? Because you see, this committee, with the select committee and appropriations, we've got the same members, just two different chairpersons. Visit provinces and specific municipalities. And we would like to know where were your interventions. When we meet with those municipalities, we know what to zoom in on. Not only to sit with them in the room, but go outside and see what projects were running and funded by you and your interventions made. So if you could
me begin with a question that potentially was asked himself. The question around the decline in young professionals. The context is that we had upward of, I think, in the prior, the reality of the situation is that when a municipality hasn't got a IDPs and looking to see what can they access from what is already available from the fiscus by our government grant. And that we do. The slides that are on there demonstrate to you how much value is given to those four municipalities over the years. The green line on top signifies to you that when we started in 2006, 2007, it was marginal. And you can see that line growing. So instead of us forcing them to take money which they can't afford, we assist them by enabling them to access the money that's already available for them, which they invariably do not because they don't have the capacity to do the engineering work, the design to go and do the application, etc. That's the value creation that we give. And then below the blue line there you see the actual financing to those that are capable of repaying. What we equally added within the DBSA is we have got a facility called a TIP. That is given to community policies that can't afford normal banking. And I think we are now substituting well over $2 billion in terms of TIP funding that has been given at a discounted cost. Discounted cost far below what we borrow the money at DBSA. We subsidize it to municipalities. And that's the program that we give to those that we can. The other thing that we do, we canvas for funding, literally not just from government, but equally from private sector, to assist municipalities. You don't see that reflected in there. Alongside that is DBSA itself, of the profits that you make. That brown line that you see, that you can see, it's also been increasing. That is money that we spend as DBSA, offer income statement, and just one part of it, that we spend offer income statement to help those municipalities and government institutions that can't afford, that don't have the money. More than we, over and above the grants that they get, over and above what you give in private sector, that just comes off our income statement. So the question, therefore, that says, what is DBSA there for? You know, if you understand the value stream that we give, we are not a profit-making organization. Much as we do get an income out of the lending stream that you do, most of that income is plowed back into the local authority. And if you look at our income statement, you'll see that in terms of revenue retained that we retain as DBSA, I think in 2009 it peaked quite at a particular. We took that money. Over the next 2 years, we spent it back into local authorities. That was probably over the 2 years, just around about R1 billion that we spent of the income that we make as DBSA. So you therefore see our income actually reducing, the net bottom line reducing. But if you want to gauge our performance in terms of sustainability, look at our sustainable earnings, which has remained stable. So the money that we make is gone back into the communities. The challenge that we sometimes find is we are structured to assist largely government institutions. We are also a requirement where we can to assist them with them, the beneficiation program that the government does through Black Economic Empowerment, particularly and specifically if it's to do with infrastructure. So we would generally not fund all and sundry that do anything else, but if it's within the sphere of what we are allowed to fund, we would then fund the EE in that context. And as far as the small-medium enterprise, small-medium macro-enterprise environment, we generally do not view that as an offering to DBSA. It can happen occasionally, but it's not our key focus. The way we assist those is we would look at institutions that DBSA has created, whether it's the Kulas of this world and whether it's the NEF, etc. We would beneficiate those institutions by giving them loans because they're better equipped to deal with the small-medium enterprises. So if you look at some companies, we beneficiate those institutions. We help sometimes in training some of their people that are in there and give them access to our own environment so they can learn and see how we do and manage the DBSA. That's how we deal largely with that level of assistance because we're not geared to deal with small, medium enterprises. We largely get to deal with government institutions and the big entities that deal with infrastructure. So our role, therefore, has been beneficiating institutions that are properly geared to deal with that, and we assist them by providing funding and other things that we can do for those entities. Therefore, the size of DBSA's intervention and how wide it spreads, and if you understand it, it deals with government policy going every state. We deal with national government, we deal with provincial government, we deal with local government, all of them giving them different interventions and aid and assistance where they need over and above the funding. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in my second delivery. IT infrastructure of the bank. It could be designing through the IT key some of the projects that they're actually looking. So that's how many projects we have. So if our systems can't tell you where those 5,000 projects are individually, I'm probably going to take the whole day. But we have a report that will tell you exactly where they are, their state of development. It will also tell you which ones were done last year and completed this year, or for that matter, under the year under review. We'll tell you exactly where they are. We've got a live reporting system which enables us to manage those deployees on the ground. We're able to tell you what they have done and what they are continuing to do at this point in time. So the size of the project is really called 5 months. What we can do for this committee, we can give a detailed report which will tell you exactly where those projects are. And if you want to go and visit them, you're welcome to do that. And I think an example, look at the map in there. That's where all the sensor magic people are deployed. And it's color-coded in terms of who they are, etc. Now, it's a vast area of coverage that you do. And the value of those that you do, I think, manifests itself in the output that we're then presenting to say we unblocked so many MIGs. So it may, when we talk about blocking 8 or 15 billion MIGs, what we're not telling is the underlying value that was actually achieved. Terms of the kind of infrastructure that was actually put on the ground. And that information is available to the members if we have to submit that.
Mr. Beloy, the reason I'm asking that question, my municipality where I'm deployed is a commissioner. It's a very poor municipality with a very low income base. Generate income for the municipality. There was a deployee from DBSA, Mr. Pretorius, until last year, but he disappeared. I can't see the result of what he did there to assist in the training of those people that stayed behind and supposed to do the work. But that's where they were in 2009. I sat with them yesterday for 8 hours. That's the reason for the question.
Yeah.
That's the reason for tomorrow's extended meeting with the provinces that will be present as well.
Okay.
If you could bring us into that picture. What are they actually doing?
Yeah.
We've got the same situation in Kaluwa Bosland in the Northern Cape, Dr. Marius Wutta. He's traveling between George and Williston to do his work as a CFO. Is he getting 2 salaries? Because he indicated to me he comes from DBSA. But he failed to supply Provincial Treasury with a certificate to get the funds they were supposed to get for the programs in the spirit. But he's got a doctorate in finance. That's the question mark that we put when we visit municipalities. What is actually happening there? Are you getting value for money for those people you are deployed or have deployed?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I think we'll be able to demonstrate that tomorrow, and we'll give you comprehensive reports, and we'll give you substance in terms of what each of those deployees, where the deployees have done for the under review. I mean, that information available. The reality, however, is that the context within which DBSA is intervening is assisting the municipalities. It is not the municipality itself. You know, we're going there to assist, and we do specific things that are required by the municipality, that the municipality asks us to do. If it's financing, we'll deal with the financing. If it's something else, we'll deal with that. We are not in a position where we can take over the municipality and deal with it holistically to get it completely, you know, into a position where it's not functional, because we don't do that as just DBSA. We've got other departments whose mandate it is precisely to do that. So our intervention is targeted intervention on the things that the municipality asked us to do. And then we then rely on other institutions of government to do most of the other work that they're intended to do. And on a combined basis, hopefully, you know, we get the results we intend to get. And I think we have a comprehensive report that was done by an independent party, which was contracted by the bank and I think National Treasury and COFTA, which will give you a coherent report as to what Senzamanje has, key successes are, and where we've had Chairman, I think what I want to do is then move into the next question, which is around what then is DBSA going to do to in response to the Minister's challenge.
So,
is there a question of
no, you should not run away with that.
Okay.
No. Chair, I think with the issue of the major project, I think we need serious clarity. And I can guess even DBSA need to be satisfied itself. When DBSA goes to a municipality where there is absolutely no technical division, and then they put a technical person there, no matter whether they view it as assisting the municipality, but in terms of that division, you have just simply taken over because there is nobody there. There is nobody there. Now, the question that one is asking is, how many of these municipalities, I'm sure you remember the report of Alton Lawless about the number of technical whatever in municipalities. And then, now, the question that I've asked is, with the municipalities that have intervened for the past 4 years, how many of these municipalities today they can run without you in that technical division? How many of them can run without DBSA in that technical division? Because these municipalities have got varying problems. Others have got limited financial expertise. Others just simply don't even have. I mean, you remember one municipality in the Northern Cape where you have got the accountants who are having some attempt. And then absolutely there's nobody there. And then others, it's a problem of the technical division, as you are saying. But the other question, Chair, that I just wanted to really, I'm sure you remember when we were in the Eastern Cape, I had a problem with the DBSA employee. Because DBSA calls a technician who has just qualified from the University of Technology, has just got his certificate as a professional. And the municipality now finds itself in this particular position that they have got a professional. When the poor technician is not even close to be a professional, miles away from being a professional. Because you only get recognized as a professional when you have registered with the engineering council. You are not called a professional just because you've got a diploma from the University of Technology. When I'm understanding what you are saying, you assist trainees who have done theory but did not do experiential work in order for them to get their certificate from the college. Now, when you have assisted them to get that certificate, doesn't mean that they are professionals. No. They are miles away from being professionals. But the terminology that you are using makes the municipalities and everybody around that person that is a professional. And the poor guy cannot even design a manual. Can't. Cannot sign a drawing. So I think the terminology within the DBSA needs to be corrected as well, because it misleads municipalities. Because they think that now they've got a professional. And Chair, without misusing your time, a professional is a person who will do everything to the best of the public, because it's governed by a code of conduct. But not just any technician. Any technician can get involved in corruption and all sorts of things. It's not a problem. Can just simply be part of the system in a municipality and do nothing. Like without actually going into details of certain municipalities, some of those employees that you have sent them to those municipalities, they actually go there and unlock the MIG or whatever. And then they specialize in the job of distributing work to their friends, wherever they come from, companies of their friends. And that's all what they are doing. The jobs are unlocked, but they are given to consultants or their brothers and whatever, or friends and all that. And that's exactly what happens. Above that, maybe it's your saying all of them, but I'm saying there are those. If I don't necessarily need to point out, but we had the same situation in court when Kondo municipality was in trouble. You had a person there from the DSA, but not at least until the municipality was put under administration. And then how does that happen?
Thank you, Honorable Mishile. In his other life, the Honorable Member is a qualified engineer. So that's his background. We will be dealing with municipalities in depth tomorrow. That's why we invited the 9 provincial chairpersons of finance as well as local government or corporate governance, as they are called in the different provinces, as well as SALGA, as well as the Auditor General or someone from his office. If you look what the bank is putting into municipalities in terms of expertise, in terms of money, if you calculate that into rounds and cents, and you read the AG's report, there's a mismatch somewhere. That's the reason why we're having a separate meeting tomorrow just on that. And the way forward, as you indicated before the meeting started this morning, what's going to happen. But you must be blunt and clear with us about your challenges. That we, how can this committee, if possible, assist?
Thank you, Chair. I think the problems of local authority probably are better dealt with and the way you're putting across tomorrow in a bit more detail. Because I think there's a lot of perceptions around what DBS's role is in local government. And the things that we do sometimes lend into that misinterpretation. And, we have to accept that members will raise questions and we could explain them, and that we will do. I think it is equally going to be sad if people go and speak to a person because of a terminology used in defining him for that matter. I don't think we've seen that because our people that have got specific things that they're asked to do, which is monitored, and it gets locked. We allow them to do that if we are confident that they will do what is required to be done, and it gets monitored. So we don't have too many instances where somebody just gets deployed and they're going to do what they want to do with the municipality. So in that context, that's how we normally manage. If there's delinquents, we look at it. Around them, I think the perception that our deployees are giving tenders to other people, you know, this is probably the first time hearing of it. Invariably, when you do have problems like that, and if the new manifest, they get investigated. And generally, we have assist municipalities in doing the tendering processes. But I think if that's another question that we have to answer, we'll probably deal with it tomorrow as well. But it'd be great if we could have specific examples brought to attention, which we can then deal with in substance if there are such instances. But I think to our knowledge, I'm not aware of those that, you know, maybe out there which we have not been brought to our attention for that matter. And certainly, I can say without any hesitation to the members, we do not have a proliferation of issues and abuse of money in the DBSA, nor the money that we manage is fully accounted for, it's recorded, and it is for value. We can demonstrate that. So that we can say with absolute confidence. And these are things that have been audited, with audit far by ourselves and by external auditors where necessary, and also the municipality does its own check. So that is accounted for. Literally, there was nothing to hide, and that would quite have to demonstrate. So, Chair, I think we can either proceed and deal some more with the matters of the Manche, or you know, we can agree that tomorrow, with the report that we submitted, which gives a much more depth report on the Manche, we can then begin to unpack that in a structured manner tomorrow, and then we'll take more detailed questions into the project, the program itself.
Ali, you can't respond to some of the questions.
Ali, you can't respond. Your question is not responded.
Yes,
sir.
Can
you repeat your question? Okay.
Chair, I have asked a question on the structure and the cost and the treatment. And I asked the questions on the municipalities, what they do, municipalities, if they can't pay and stuff like that.
Deal with the restructuring, and that's what I want to now deal with in the second phase when I give you of DBS Bank. I think over the years, the total amount, how much is it? Around 1.1? It's probably over $1 billion over the, you know, our history as an institution. A huge portion of that pertains to, I think, the work that we do with local government. Our attitude in terms of municipalities is quite benevolent, in a sense. Because in terms of the law, when an entity can't pay, we are allowed to go and sue it and liquidate it if we have to, or take much more standard action. But what we do with local authorities or municipalities when they can't pay, we actually go there and help them to collect their rates and taxes where they can, and to help them to access the funding and generate revenue to repay. We don't go and sue them and then just close them down. And in instances where they really, really cannot pay, we simply run it off. We don't then liquidate. So that's how we treat municipalities that don't pay. It's a different thing when it's a private sector entity, because there we go to the full hog of the law. You know, if it's a B or a private company that we lend money to for instance they can't pay, that is much more standard approach by DBSA. There's much more rigor in there. We would pursue in terms of the law, would liquidate if we have to liquidate, and we'll call the guarantees. But on local authority, our attitude has been significantly benevolent. idea around capacitating the municipalities and helping them to become self-sufficient becomes incidental in what we do. So the program itself was intended to do that. We've added those components of the profession, young professionals, because we realize it again that that is in there. As better assistance to the program itself. And those people are there, you know, we can show you what they're doing. So we were never meant to go and resuscitate the municipality to get it to actually work. We were meant to go in there and unblock the mix, make sure the money is spent correctly and for value in terms of infrastructure. That's the mandate that we got with National Treasury. We then built on top of that saying, let's try and create overall value and make sure that in some instances where we can, and with the assistance and cooperation of that municipality, we can leave the component of sustainability with that municipality. There are areas where we've been very successful, there are areas where we have not been successful. And I'm not sure if I've got the actual statistics with me here, probably in the report that we've got. Paul, do you want to comment on that?
Thank you, Chair. Just to build on the CA point, we are present in about 199 municipalities, and 94 of those will have the financial impact supporting, as the CE indicated, operations in those municipalities, including capacity building of officials. And in about 105, we had the technical deployment. Where we're sitting now, about 20% of our young professionals have been absorbed by municipalities to take over, either as financial managers or engineers in those municipalities. One of the things, Chair, and that metric is indicative of what we had right from the beginning to say, before we enter municipality, we need to do an assessment to determine the needs of that municipality, and also assist the municipality to put together a business plan. And based on that business plan, then we put together a performance plan for particular deployment. We have developed a sustainable municipal reporting system that helps us to do that. Our estimate was that we'll enter municipalities and exit in a period of about 3 years. Our assumptions then were that when we go to the municipality, we'll find officials to whom we'll transfer skills, and in the process then be able to exit after those officials have gained ground and are able to manage the affairs of the municipality. But when we went into the municipalities, as members of the committee will speak up, we found very high vacancy rates. And there were no officials to whom to transfer the skills, hence the young professional program that the CEO has been talking to. And so we used that opportunity to build the sustainable part of our program and its intervention. And our measure of our exit strategy that we put in place for every 3 years, we went back in each of these municipalities and did and utilized that in the manager, rather that sustainable municipal reporting tool, to assess how far the capacity built has benefited the municipalities and if we're in a position to exit. And as I indicated, many of the municipalities were not able, apart from those where we've been able to get the young professionals to be absorbed. And 20% of those, as we indicated, the number was about 170 in the beginning. Shell, the young professionals that we have in the municipalities, their work stream is very distinct from that of the experts. And as the honorable member indicated, these are engineers that have just graduated from school, and they are in training. He indicated in his opening remarks that the young professionals are going through a structured program where we're preparing them for registration for their professional bodies. And there are three streams. We have got finance, we're planning, we've got engineering. We are supporting the engineers to register with EXA, the planners with SACPLAN, and the finance to qualify for diploma in municipal finance. So wherever we had these young professionals, they were not supposed to be in charge, and we made sure that they're not in charge. They were under supervision. We had a mentor. First of all, they had to report to a coach. The coach was the expert engineer who had to assist them to go through their manuals and logbooks. And then a mentor who was attached to SAIFI, the South African where we're sitting now, 10% of those are ready, and we've got another 20% also who are ready to go through the registration. Chair, the issue of procurement. Chair, our engineers were in the municipalities to release the MIG, to go through feasibility, to assist to the feasibilities after our planners are finished with the integrated development planning, to assist to the technical reports. As Chair indicated in the opening remarks, that's why we are present in the provinces, just to assist to unlock those technical reports and then get the MIG registered and released for expenditure. When the MIGs are released, our engineers support with the drafting of and finalization of tender bids. They are subject to procurement policies of the municipality, and none of them has the right to appoint anybody. They report to the CFO, they report to the MM, and none of them has the right to appoint consultants. So when that happens, as the CE indicated, investigations do take place. Disciplined, and in cases we let some of them go. Chair, the last 2 points one would want to make to talk to Chair the issue of the Karoo program that you indicated, Mr. Botha, Dr. Botha, he was deployed by the DVSA, but he has since been absorbed by the municipality and is no longer on the DVSA payroll. So he's a full employee of the DVSA. I know they have got a number of challenges with accessing our grant funding because they couldn't manage to deal with our requirements, and we're assisting them and we're working with him now as an employee of the municipality to process that and so that we can give the grant funding. In terms of Nkondla municipality, Chair, we all saw the problems that Nkondla went through and the problems with the mayor and all the difficulties that were in that municipality. We had a technical deployee who was deployed there. He's one of our best performing deployees, 100% spent MIG during the first half of the year. But unfortunately, around issues of procurement and other difficulties that we went through, we had to withdraw him. There were difficulties with the municipality, the mayor problems that I indicated, and that put him in the back office until those problems were sorted. As I'm speaking now, we have redeployed him on a shared service, and we believe that now he will resettle back and assist the municipality. Chair, I think I'll stop there for now and get hand back to the
team. Chairman, as I said, we do have the details, and if we need to go into depth, we can give you a specific example as the MD is pointing out now. I was trying to hold it back because tomorrow we're going to have a substantive discussion. But happy to share if the chair doesn't allow.
That detail tomorrow, because we must get a better way forward to deal with the issues within the specific municipality. That's the objective of tomorrow. That's where we invited all the role players that are active in the different municipalities. Your question has been asked.
I haven't responded to
After that response, we break for tea and come back for your for your second part of your presentation.
I'll probably ask the CFO to respond to the question of the cost of borrowing. But I think it's important to note the context that we borrow from the market, the banks, and the insurance houses, and then we then have to lend that same money that we borrow into the municipalities as we do. So it's not like we're given money by government and then we take the money given and then lend it out. We have to go and borrow money and then lend it out. I think that context is very important, I think, for the members to actually understand. Pierre, you want to speak to the cost of borrowing?
Thank you, Steve. Just in context as well, like the Steve said, we do borrow for the domestic market, about 70-80%. And the current spread off the market, and on an unsecured basis, is about 90 basis points above the government yield. Municipality business that we do, we obviously do apply risk rating criteria to the municipalities. the lending rate, again, based on government, given a cost of funding of 90 basis points, our lending rates are somewhere in the order of 180 to 220 basis points above the government yield. So percentage of total asset book is around 1.82%. So one can see that in a municipality local government structure, there's an under recovery of overhead, and we do recover that from our private sector clients on a regular basis. As far as the poor municipalities are concerned, the member also asked here around the criteria. It is difficult for poor municipalities to actually borrow money because of the inability to fund and to repay. However, having said that, though, we do source we use internal subsidized funds to assist municipalities. So the current lending rate to the poor municipalities on the TIP program is 6.75%. We previously adjusted it from 6.5% purely out of economic conditions, but 6.75% on a cost of borrowing 9%, one can see out of that 550 million that's in the middle section of the grant, we subsidized the two municipalities in the order of about 150 million rand in the last financial year in terms of non-recovery of interest, never mind non-recovery of cost itself. That's loaded on the cost. We do have a line of credit which we negotiate with the international funder, whereby they also assist us at a rate closer to LIBOR, which we try and utilize, but even that cost of borrowing is still fundamentally about 2.5% higher than what we actually lend to the two municipalities.
So I think the cost what are we charge on the work that we do for assisting municipalities, the answer is no. And in fact, the reverse is true. For every 1 rand that we spend in assisting municipalities, the National Treasury puts 70 cents of that 1 rand. We put 30 cents of that 1 rand. So we contribute about 30% out of our own revenue in what we do for local authorities. So we're not charging them. We actually contribute our own money to assist them. We're not getting any revenue in the capacity building. The next question was around turnaround times. I think I'll probably ask Paul to give you a sense of what has happened, the MD of the fund, in terms of how quick we are able to do that. But again, just to give you the context, before we started, we're told that there's a problem in municipalities accessing the fiscus. They couldn't get the fiscus dispersed. On thorough investigation, we discovered the problem is not just sitting with the municipality, but sits on all the value chain of government, whether it's the municipality, district authority, the provincial structure, and the department itself. As a result, we have to deal with the entire value chain to ensure that we enable rapid approval of the project. So today, as we speak, we're helping the department itself, we're helping some of the provincial authorities, district authority, and also the local authority to ensure that their application, where it leaves the municipality, it can go through the lab. So in that context, we've truncated the delivery, and the value is that the application is now at this final revenue stream because we fixed all the blockages in there. If I were to quantify that for you, you know, it would be difficult for me to say 2 days, 3 days, but we can demonstrate that it used not to happen, not even happen at the place. It wasn't happening. It's now happening, and it's happening in a particular way. Paul, do you want to just comment on that?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, what we've seen is that the projects differ in terms of the turnaround, the range between 6 to 12, to 24 months, depending on the complexity of the project. We have, I think, to link this question back to what was asked by the Honourable Members earlier, that we have unlocked 17 billion in the annual report, reported, but then we've spent 8.9 billion. I think those two questions are linked, Chair. And the issue, Chair, is that we are dealing mainly with multi-year projects. The infrastructure projects, some of them are simple and straightforward, so you may have 6 months adequate to deal with them. Others, bigger, more complex projects, and the process may take as long as 24 months, hence the difference between how much we unlock against how much we spend, 17 billion against 8.9 billion. Chair, what we've picked up is that the more complex projects are in more capacitated, bigger municipalities, metros, and then the less complex ones we find them in a smaller, less capacitated municipalities. One of the things that we have done also to manage this is that we have structured our projects into what we call technical projects, which are infrastructure projects, and non-technical projects. Non-technical projects are those that you may have seen from the annual report. The planning projects and the financial projects, those are far quicker. Planning mainly focusing on integrated government planning, working with COGTA to produce credible IDPs, but also the other matters of master planning, sector planning, and land use management plan. On the financial side, we focus mainly on the system, but also Section 71 reports, compliance issues, and compliance with the 16 priority areas of the MFMA. Those are shorter projects that you may find easy to fit within 6 months. Thanks, Chair.
So the last question was around the 200 million rent. I'm trying to figure out, does anybody know about the 200 million rent on SME?
Yes, Chair. Chair, my recollection is the 9 billion rent of the jobs fund that the DBSA has been asked by the Minister of Finance to prepare.
No, but well, I think this is specifically 200 million rand, and I wanted to get the 9 billion rand is a new program that we haven't done yet. It's still under discussion with the Minister, so we haven't got that yet.
Chair, the 200 million rand are from the IDC. The show is referred to IDC, but IDC said they'll take that to DBSA to monitor the fund or to the disbursement of the fund. I might be wrong with the figure, but I think it's 200 million rand.
From the IDC to DBSA. Can you respond tomorrow?
Yeah.
Do some investigation.
Yeah, I think we will have to check. Well, I'm not aware of 200.
Also to our researchers, if you can delve into that, please.
Yeah. I think it's probably to another DFI, not to DBSA, but we'll clarify that tomorrow. I'm not aware of receiving any such money from the IDC, but we'll check and refer tomorrow. Check. All right.
Thank you. We're going to break for tea for 10 minutes, working on that clock. When we come back, Mr. Malloy, your engagement internationally on page 64, your operations outside South Africa, if I've got it right and I read your report, you are engaged in 8 countries. Do you get value for money, the money you are spending there? Take us just through that quickly. When we come back, and then you can give us a picture of your destruction. Thank you, members. We quickly break for tea and a comfort break. Value for our money. Secondly, who's doing the oversight?
try and ensure that most of what we spend outside is money that we borrowed from international DFIs and also local banks to do that. Equally, the beneficiation by DBSA is reduced towards South Africa in the sense that of our total balance sheet, we have probably about 30% of that being outside South Africa. 70% is the greater work that's done in the country. The resources are equally split in that context. We don't do nowhere as much foreign members part of the corporate plan to read and get the details, and then you're then able to then ask a more coherent question out of that. So we're just giving a sense of what you did present, and if the members want, then we can engage, you know, once again in line of that in terms of corporate plan.
I believe it's important because you're one of the stakeholders we deal with in this committee.
Okay, I think let me begin by just giving a sense of how we've structured as an organization. In the middle, we've got the client facing, what we call client facing, or the institutional facing divisions within the bank. Those comprise our three operations, which finances predominantly in South Africa and predominantly local government. And when I say local government, it's from provincial downwards, because we don't generally fund the departments themselves or ministries. And then we've got an investment bank, which deals with all state-owned entities, such as your Eskom, your Transnet, etc., and also the other private sector-related activities on infrastructure in the investment banking division. Then we've got the international division, which deals with methods outside South Africa, which we just presented now. And then we then have two other very important take a project from concept to a point where it's bankable. now to procure the actual equipment to implement that project. We have to do that. In South Africa, we do quite a lot of that with local authorities, including construction monitoring and management, and also we deal with the operations and maintenance. So DBSA is the reason why we get the awards internationally, which puts us in a space where we compete with international DFI and get to be rated the best, because the value chain is quite extensive and it's demonstrable, because we have got projects that we can demonstrate this value chain that happens. So it's not a question of paperwork, it is there. But when you're direct transit and you do a lot of things, you have a natural challenge that you meet as an organization. Some of those, you know, do make mistakes, as I said, but our ability that we're able to fix those mistakes because we're in standard value chain and actually get all of those ahead of all in. Because to give you an analogy, it would mean that, you know, if you're in playing soccer, you win most of the games. You know, some of them you lose, but at the end of the day, you win the league. And that's our position as DBSA. We're not a perfect organization, but we're towards making sure that we do deliver. So in that context, the awards that we get recognized as value chain, it's important as a point of departure, as I then tell you what we're not going to do, because it then tells you that over the 25 or 27 years of our existence, we have amassed a variety of skills. We have restructured organization in line with what we believe government is looking for, and that has been proven in the engagement that we let the government in terms of them saying, yes, this is what we want from you. Now we are now into, can we commit on the new strategy? Can we deliver what we are now promising in the context of the new strategy? Some of those things put question marks on the role that we need to continue to play in the capacity building aspect of it, and all of those measures are under consideration for us to decide once and for all how do we build a coherent national institutional capacity framework. And I think we've been engaging with COPTE and other stakeholders, and hopefully at some point one of those mandated authorities will be able to come to this committee and present a holistic plan. And whether or not DBS is going to have a role to play in that will be determined by those authorities, because we are purely an agent for select activities in that context. In terms of intervention, the way we look at them ourselves as an entity, we exist largely to serve the communities within which we live. When we look at entities of government, whether they be provincial, government, metros, municipalities, technicons, and other private companies that deal with infrastructure, we look at them as being conduits within which we deliver the value to the communities on the ground. So our focus, therefore, is going through these entities as entities that partner and facilitate our delivery to the intended communities. So in that context, therefore, we class these entities into two categories in the main. The entities that are strong meaning that they may have the institutional capacity in terms of warm-bodied people sitting there manning the department and actually working, and they may have their own strategies, but they may have specific gaps. And part of the typical gap is what constitutes market failure, which means that they have very, very high-risk projects that they need to undertake in terms of assisting government in the delivery, whether it be state-owned entities or municipalities, which the banks, the private sector, would normally say we can't fund them because we think the risk is too high. That's where DBSA would normally intervene and do that on strong entities. Then you've got the weaker entities, which not only have got can't access funding, which is defined as being market failure, but are institutionally weak because they don't have the resources. Sometimes systems are not working, the strategy is not defined, what in terms of what they want to do, they don't have the necessary people. And that, I think, in the context of Africa, becomes one of the biggest challenges that we find. Now, when you look at government holistically, one of the questions, but why? You know, why are they recruiting people? It's because, firstly, there's a chronic shortage of skills, I think, nationally in the country. That is quite evident in the sense that skills become quite expensive. realize that the challenges that the government faced in terms of delivery have been fought. The first one is we are so far behind in terms of the battles that we're dealing with, and it's a mountain of things that we want to deliver as a country. Compounding that is institutionally within government, our ability to deliver even the normal things that we do is also constrained for a number of reasons, and I'm not going to go into those. But those are two critical challenges that actually make delivery in the country very difficult. Now, the question is, how do you catch up with the backlog and deliver what the constituents are looking for? At the same time, you have to deal with an institution that can't deliver because it's constrained because of either resources, people, etc., whatever it is, but it's got constraints. Now, the challenge that we have is getting those institutions to deliver fast enough to catch up with the backlog and beyond that, to put the infrastructure that defines the country to become a globally competitive country into the future. Now, those are the challenges that the minister has thrown to us and say, it's one thing to say we are delivering as an institution as BDSA, having done a myriad of activities, having produced great value, but when you step outside that and look at the country in terms of its mandate, etc., you know, we are not touching base. We can't sit outside and say, BDSA, yes, you've done great, and we can both and say our financial looks great. But in terms of what we require to do as an institution to satisfy the communities out there, there's yet a lot of people that are without houses, without electricity. Many challenges exist. So can we then say as an institution or as a government culture that would deliver? And that's not. So knowing the challenges that we face, how then do we design a framework that enables government to do two things? One is rapid delivery of infrastructure, not in one municipality or one province, but nationally. Secondly, is fixing those institutions that have got problems so that down the line they're able to catch up and they will deliver at the required rate of delivery that the constituents is looking for. So we spent literally about 18 months deliberating, talking to government departments, ministries, our own treasury communities, the minister himself, trying to define for the minister how do we do that. What we come up with is to create a center of excellence for infrastructure development. Now, what this means is that it has to look at government delivery in two categories. The need to deal with the backlog and create visible impact and greater reach to those communities that we have yet not touched. There's equally the challenge of fixing the institutions of government to make sure that they are able to do that. Now, we can't hope to catch up with the backlog by shoving delivery through an institution that needs to be fixed at the same time. The results of it are obvious. You are not going to deliver the pace that you need. Therefore, we've created an intervention which, I think with the discussions of a variety of ministries, we've got consensus as to there's a need to put interventions that deliver rapidly, like we evidenced during the 2010s. At the same time, there's a need for us to be fixing government holistically, right from ministries, departmental aspect of it, provincial level, and local authority. Create one basic chain that enables you get government to do a number of things. The first is we've got limited resources as a country, therefore we'll prioritize. What are the key sectors that we need to deal with?
government is at the same time evidencing rapid delivery. It's taken us a long time, but where we are now, especially with the Department of Health, we're now getting to be signing specific mandates, which are now being done, so we can do a delivery at scale that says if we deliver hospitals, it shouldn't be one hospital in one province. We should create a framework that says we're delivering our hospitals nationally or even more across the country. If we want to build schools, we shouldn't be focusing on one municipality, one province. Can we create a framework that delivers across the country? Because it is a shortage across the country. The intention is to demonstrate impact, demonstrate effect, and demonstrate scale. And most importantly, while enabling government to get value for money. It's a big and ambitious challenge. We acknowledge that. But it's not a challenge that EDSS says we've got all the solutions we're going to do it alone. That's not the case. We're working with government. Most of the ideas and strategies are government-owned, or the respective own strategies. And we are helping every institution to catalyze those and to ensure that delivery then takes place. As I'm speaking to you now, specific agreements have been concluded with the Energy Department, Department of Energy, the Water and Sanitation Department, the Health Department, and we're in the process of concluding an agreement with also the other departments such as Education and Human Development. And the intention is to equip government with resources that enable GDAs to focus on institutional capacity building, fixing the things that need to be fixed to accelerate delivery through the value chain, at the same time defining a framework that enables accelerated delivery. Alongside that, it then raises the question around capacitating local municipalities that, you know, need to be capacitated. As part and parcel of that is dialogue that I think we're having with the national departments. What is the best route going forward? Central Manager has been a great program, but on its own, it is not big enough, nowhere near what's required to resolve the challenges on institutional capacity that government overall faces. We have to rethink that. And those, I think, is something that I'll let the principals, who are the custodians of governance and finance, to present their own strategy in that context. And EDSA will engage, if so-called, by way of an agent, as we normally would do, where we're required. And tomorrow, when we're on wrap, that will then tell you where we are, we send someone what it has done, what the future is going to be in that context. So, Chair, I think there's all sorts of other things in here that speak to the model of delivery, as we've structured it, and as we are ending up with the variety of means that we're talking to. There's a financial effect of what we want to do and how we're going to fund DBSA going forward. The good thing institutionally is that we need more people. So to answer the question that was raised earlier, you know, we're contemplating retrenchment. There's no such thing as DBSA in effect. You know, we need more skills because our constituents are looking for more skills to deploy in them. So in our context, we're going to be looking for more manpower to roll out the delivery. It's going to take us a while, but if we can catalyze that, even if we can only do 50% of what we're undertaking, it will change the way in which government is looking to deliver. So we are hopeful that the conversation and the discussion that we're having now are going in the right direction, and hopefully we are able to close with the department, and if there's a role for DBSA to play in those strategies, we will assist. Where they can do it on their own, they will proceed as a department with the value that we have added. So, Chair, in a nutshell, that defines politically where DBSA is going. There's other interventions that we're going to put in the development fund, which are going to look at the whole extension of other services that we give, whether they be some elements of capacity building, whether they be training. The big one that I think is under discussion is the job creation fund, which we've been asked to consider as an institution, whether we can manage. And I think those plans are under interrogation. And if we're successful, hopefully when next we present, we'll be giving you line of sight in terms of what we intend to do on that space. So it's a big and complex corporate plan. That's what I was saying. Ideally, that, you know, if we would be able to look at it, read it, then understand that you're in a better position to interrogate it. Thank you, Chair.
That is a mouthful for the future. I'm looking forward to honourable members for the day that the Director General of the Department or HND in the province comes to Parliament and tells his committee, my department recruited 100 students to study engineering and public works. can carry on. Because when we engage with departments, the word capacity constraint appears nearly in every paragraph. And the sooner we get grip on this, the better. A country that excels in this is China. That's why they are a growing economy. Can you look what it is? And we can learn from them. But year after year, we hear the same story. And that's why what you're telling us is very important. Where does this fit into the bigger picture? In the country, referring to the Ministry of Planning, of Minister Manuel, we must look at the bigger picture. So that's why this committee and the preparation want to do things a bit differently. And after 5 years, after this 5 year term, we can say that we accomplished the following 1, 2, 3, 4. If we can't do that, we're heading for a crisis bigger than a thing. Honourable members? Anyone else?
It's just unfortunate that you restricted your question to the Director General of the Department. And the same question, of course, needs to be put in front of Baloyi. It's crime of skills, but what contribution is he making to produce those skills and make sure that they are available when he needs them? Because we can't sit in a situation where we keep on snatching people from one another, especially from a public sector stealing officials from another public sector. It is their view. Probably private sector and public. And we can sleep with that to such an extent. But where you've got one municipality stealing a technical manager from another municipality and promise extra 200 rand, actually be capacity to one municipality and do that. Surely it's something that needs to be attended. And of course, then we must put that question, how many has it sent to the colleges at the university to go and study engineering or finances? Maybe you can hear from him. Then the other thing is just simply to understand when it comes to the planning. The South African Institute of Civil Engineers, they want something, I think they produce something so-called infrastructure scorecard or something like that. Have the DBSA seen the particular piece of paper? Is it valuable to them? Does it assist them in really seeing where there are backlogs of infrastructure or whatever? If not, I think there is a gentleman, the CEO, I think, called Mendel Bile, inside. If you can make contact with him and see whether that can assist to really see a way forward in terms of assisting the country. But, as I may have indicated before the tea, is DBSA's mandate does not include capacity building to the municipality, that thing must be attended urgently. Because it is actually undermining what you are doing as this municipality. It's undermining that. It's contradicting what you are doing. You know, it is just like what the chairperson has said. Appointing a consultant, come to the municipality for a specific project, do the work, get out, everything is still the same. So even yourself, you are actually just simply joining the system. We're not improving. But you are not necessarily a private institution. You may be private in some sense, but you are part of the bigger national government. And we can't behave like private consultants that actually prey on innocent government institutions and disappear. Of course, it's that the chief operations officer would like to have a situation where the municipalities need this intervention. And have a sustained business for the coming couple of years. But surely we must have a bigger
deputies of the country. And the deputies of the country is that these municipalities must be able to do at least the minimum work that they must do, and we help them wherever we need to help. We can't have a situation where the municipalities just cannot do anything. They can't put a business plan, they can't apply to COXA to be an implementing agent, and they can't just simply fill in this form of Section 37 or whatever. I mean, that's really awkward. And we need to assist. If it is not part of your mandate, I would request that we raise this with the necessary authorities. It needs to be corrected as quick as possible. Otherwise, we just run in circles. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I think my question has been partly answered on the issue of retrenchment. What I'm still standing is I just want to know, some people have been shipped around, given new titles and so forth. Was there any cost implication giving those people new titles, new responsibilities? And also on the issue of development fund, I know the question is they are going to do some research or not research, but look into their books and see what is about the 20 million I talked about, but it's actually 282 million. My researcher, the committee researcher, has finalized about 282 million in other funds. Chairperson, if you remember, even asked the chief economist of IDC, Lum Kilemondi, he says, yes, there's such an amount of money. I can't tell exactly how much, but there is the money that IDC will hand over to DBSA to manage. However, they are also concerned about the rate that is within DBSA. They'll be able to disperse those funds as possibly as they can, so that the SMEs can develop in time. My other question, Chairperson, is on the. We know that municipalities are going to deal focus on municipalities tomorrow, but the main thing that we have. This committee and everybody else, municipalities, is Operation Clean Audit. Most of the municipalities have got the failure audits, you know, at best, you know, reports from the Auditor General. How far is the DBSA involved to make sure that there's clean audit in municipalities, or municipalities get clean audit? And how far is it, or is it working hand in hand with SALGA? You know that SALGA said they are doing something with that. But I just want to find out from DBSA, really, because that is the main concern. Now we know that clean audit as such does not translate to, you know, safe delivery on the ground, but they are the main also essential that the clean audit is responsible.
The emphasis on the integrated approach to come up with a clean audit at the end of the day. DBSA fits into the bigger picture, Costa, Treasury, etc.
Just to add that, Chair, I think we may have heard that part of the problems of the clean audit, it has been records of infrastructure owned by the municipality. And some of this infrastructure, they include even road, water, storage, and the rest, which DBSA employees, the technical division can add in assisting those municipalities to have those specific records. And it has been a problem for some of the municipalities. They just simply don't know their network, and then they can't account, and then they get this qualified audit every time. Thank
you. I think the members are really passionate about the state of local government, and I appreciate it. So let me try and see if I can provide some clarity on some of our interactions. There was a question raised around what is DBSA doing about skills. I think our record on that is actually quite a brilliant record. When we say we're training people with 11,000 interventions, I think if you sit down and unpack what we've been able to deliver, I think it's actually been significant. two questions is, are we doing enough to sort out all the problems that government have got? And the answer is no. You know, we're the first contractee. Because we were never designed to sort out all the problems of local government. We were supposed to be a targeted intervention. But notwithstanding that targeted intervention, we are not sorting out the major problems of capacity building on the ground. So the question is, knowing and the experience that you've had, what do we design that is ultimately going to sort out those problems? And typically, our interventions were not designed to fix the municipality and capacity that it can be left on. It was part of what we would hopefully achieve. The primary objective was to ensure it delivers on its mandate. Therefore, when we tell the engineer that the primary objective is deal with the project, get the project on the ground, and where we got warm bodies, transfer skills as we go. Now, what we probably need is to focus on that institutional capacity aspect of deal with it directly, rather than, you know, doing it incidentally, as you know, what has been the norm. There is probably a lot of money that's being spent on capacity building by many institutions across the South Africa. The question that's being asked is, do we need to consolidate all of those initiatives into one holistic framework for government to deal once and for all with institutional capacity in local government? Maybe the answer is yes. Maybe the current framework is working, but somebody needs to come and deal with it. And I think we've given input in terms of our view to the departments that are the custodians of governance in those areas for them to actually deal with, because it's their mandate to fix those institutions. And we are assisting as far as we can. What they're going to demand of us going in the future, we don't know yet. It's under discussion. And tomorrow we're going to deal with some of those aspects as SDG. Restructuring. I think in an organization you'll find that people move. They move in the DBS for probably one of three reasons. One is promotion, you know, if they're doing well. Two is change in the job stream, if we think that they can do better in another work stream. And hopefully, we don't get to number three, which is if they're simply not performing and they're delinquent organization, then they exit the organization or they get demoted. You don't have too many of those. But people will move. Arising from that, we respond to the government challenges, as I was indicating that if we now need to upskill in terms of the major roles that we're going to do, it means some people, because they're stronger in certain aspects, we might deploy them to go and deal with specific aspects in the government. So they move for that reason. And similarly, we may have other people coming to assist us. So it's normal movement in there, whether it's promotion, whether it's lateral, you know, cost implications are actually quite relative for that matter. If you look at our cost-to-income ratio, we probably are the best in the sector, in the sense that a normal BFI will be sitting anywhere between 65 to 80% cost-to-income ratio. Banks traditionally in the private sector, because they've got huge delivery structure, sits anything between 45 to 50, and some of them who are not performing close to 60%. GBSA is sitting at the moment at 42%. So in that context, we manage our cost quite effectively to make sure that we actually adhere to that. Implications in the future, yes, there will be cost implications. But what we want to make sure we do is, what we're doing is should be something that ensures the organization remains sustainable as an entity. We must ensure that whatever we do here, we are able to pay for it as an organization. And where we're doing things on an agent basis, extraordinary things that we do for government, then, you know, we will leverage of that department's own resources in terms of budget and help them to implement their plans. But where we need to do work for DBSA, it comes with our revenue. As you're saying, we will continue our tradition of taking up part of our revenue, giving it back to government in the variety of initiatives that we would do. The issue of clean audit. I think Paul will give you statistics as to how much we've done on that one. Again, it's another edit components that we've included on center manager outside the original design for usual design. I think we were statistics that because we realized it's a problem. And I think Paul, if you can just give the members some steps on the clean audit.
Thanks, thanks Chair. Chair, the CEO has indicated the DBSA supports the Minister of Corporate Governance's initiative on operational clean audit in the municipalities. Two targets were set members, as you may have picked up on page 24 of the annual report, we registered improvement in audit issues in about 65% of the municipalities that we support in terms of the financial aspect. And 32% of those actually registered improvement in audit opinion, and 33% reduction in the number of issues that have been raised. Thank you, Chair.
Johnny?
Just a follow-up to what you said, so that when you took that time. I just want, first of all, Mr. Bali, you see, I think we do understand now what is the causes of PTSD and the kind of interventions that you do, particularly at local government level. But earlier on in the morning, a point was made that each time you are called to a municipality, before you get into that municipality, you sort of do a legal analysis of that particular municipality in terms of the skills that are there and the shortages that are there, so that you can be able to do a proper intervention. Now, coming back to the point or the question that Honorable Masir has been consistent in terms of race, which in my view seems not to understand what it is that is having on. Much as it's not part of your core business to do capacity building in municipalities, the point that you understand is clearly. But surely you agree with us that by this type of intervention that you are providing, it is expected in a situation where you intervene, and after doing your analysis, before intervening, you realize that, okay, these people do have, but let's take for an example in the financial field. They do have for the CFO, they do have for all the clerks and everybody. But this particular municipality is busy. And now you deploy resources in that particular municipality to do an assist. From where I stand, I'm expecting that if you deploy a qualified professional to go and assist in that particular municipality, say after 12 months or so, or 6 months, whatever the period, when that person leaves, those who were there are well capacitated to continue on their own now. You see? That's the point that we're trying to make. But if this person comes and I'm the CFO, he comes and do the things, or she comes and do all the things, run, after 12 months he or she goes back, I'm still as dull as I was when this person comes, then that intervention is not assisted. That municipality. You understand? So that is the one point that you are making, that in situations like that, what would be your advice to whoever is responsible for that particular element? Now, in a situation where the intervention was made, you send people to a municipality in a situation where there is absolutely no personnel. This municipality is basically in terms of their books and everything, because they don't have CFOs and stuff like that. Or if they do have, those are people who don't even have any clue about accounting principles or anything in the financial field. Like, we know for a fact that in lots of municipalities, hence the amendment to the Citizens Act, a lot of people were appointed as if those positions are political appointments. A person who has not even done anything with regard to accounting and anything, appointed to the CFO. But we expect in such situation, again, if your people comes in, one would expect that the kind of role that they're going to do, apart from doing the actual work, would be to advise that municipality to help them appoint the right people. But if they just get in and work with these people who know nothing about finances, it will mean, obviously, during that period when your people are there, our people, as municipality, are doing absolutely nothing. They're just doing their salaries. This one is running the show, doing this. After a period, you call that particular person, maybe to go and intervene elsewhere. The problem still persists, is still there. You have done nothing. Except that you have done something during that the stage of that particular person. So, So that is the point that Honorable Masu is trying to bring across. That in such situations, matters is not your core business. But at least through that experience, you should be in a position now where you are saying, we think going forward, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 should be connected. Otherwise, it's a waste of time and resources. Again, the last point here. With regard to the question, do you know where your employees are? I think that question was directed to a situation where you have deployed Selina, and Selina has now resigned from DSA. Are you sure when you say they are all absorbed, if we can all follow, we'll find them in Jewish municipality? Or are we just producing these people, making lots of resources, I mean, deploying resources to build their capacity as DSA, only for them to be taken by the private sector? So those are some of the things that we wanted to understand. Not that we are forcing you now, because it's like we are forcing you to capacity municipality. Yes, as a byproduct of your intervention, we expect that to happen. But you understand it is not your core business or core role in this particular role. And we appreciate all the good work that you DSA has done so far. There are a number of things that you can pinpoint where your intervention has worked. But you can so, there are a number of bad things that have happened as a result of this, because surely much as you do monitor these people and all these things, there are those who are still bad people, like you might have overhead as we're talking about that, some of the concerns raised by Anomaly in terms of those who are now getting and taking control. Particularly, you know, it's in the nature of any human being. Once you are deployed in the area where people are in the dark, once you realize you are the only person holding the torch, you want to be the boss and run everything. Those things do happen. But it's not happening across the country where the DDA is. Those are isolated areas. But we are saying, even if it's happening in a small scale, but we need to be aware of such things and adhere to a situation where we do. I just wanted to clarify that element here so that as Mr. Bandoni now, you have a clear understanding of why this question keeps on coming and coming and coming.
Practical example is Karoo Hoogland, where Dr. Botha was actually deployed and became an employee of the municipality. Came from the disclaimer of a report. They are now at a qualified report, and they will get the unqualified report. The other example is Kamiesberg. There was also a deployee from DBSA, Mr. Pretorius, with treasury. But the DBSA deployee just left. We don't know where he is. Kamiesberg is going to receive a disclaimer now for the fifth year. And yesterday we said it's stopping here. And I want you to put Kamiesberg Municipality in huge letters on your documents there. Because there's a request now, a formal request. And we will deal with that tomorrow. That's a new way forward where you are actually shifting that to another department. But it doesn't matter which department, the problem is still there. How do we take that further to come to the summary of Honorable John? Thank you. There's a strategy meeting also running for the debate.
Thank you, Shepherd. I don't think the capacity within the development bank is in question, and also the capacity for it to be able to acquire credit personnel. The issue is the capacitation of the municipalities themselves. Now, my question is, do you see yourself as the DDSA, and probably with a partnership with Treasury, traveling together to ensure that you come with a strategy or a plan where some of the universities would deliberately be targeted get either personnel within the municipalities or you recruit students from high schools, and those students go through the program so as to benefit those municipalities. This type of students who come from this particular type of program can sign a contract with the municipalities to say, we are going to be working here for the next 3 years, for the next 5 years, you know, as the case may be. Something that would ensure that personnel resides within those municipalities and they are able to benefit from the municipalities. Probably plans in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Malloy. My response?
Chairman, thanks for clarity from the member. The questions that are being raised around them, are we doing enough and recognizing, and the point is actually quite correct, you know, that it is not enough for us to go and follow the problem because, you know, the sewage was going into drinkable water, we sent an engineer to sort that out, and then, you know, that's one problem. There's a myriad of problems, and those are associated with the actual institutional capacity of the municipality. If we don't sort that out, it becomes a continuing thing. Therefore, as Lydia said, we have to take that into account. And I think that message is actually quite important for us to take. The question is, do we have a certain institutional capacity to do that holistically and solve the problem? I think we have proven to ourselves that we don't. This is why this whole instance around capacity building is now under review as to what we do to resolve their aspect of it. So the point you're making is actually quite valid. You know, and I think it's quite correct for the members and the community to expect that when we are there, we should try and do that and ensure that we do leave some capacity. We've tried a variety of interventions. We've tried some of them. In significant instances, we've been successful, but equally, in other areas, we failed this money. The failure is not necessarily because, you know, we haven't done something wrong, but it is difficult at understanding that when we go there as an institution, our role is to move the institution by purely influencing. We don't direct and say, you must do this, you must do this. We influence because we are purely there to assist. And we don't have the authority to say, you've employed somebody that has got an experience of running a shop on the corner as now your MEC, you must remove them. You know, we don't have that authority. So when you find people who are there who don't have the capacity now, who don't have the aptitude to actually be trained to actually lead the resources in there, it's very difficult for us to say, you must move. In some instances, we're successful when we work in partnership with the mandate holders, such as COFCA, you know, they do assist us in ensuring that the municipality takes the advice that we give them, because we do give us advice in that instance. But the problems of institutional capacity building in local communities is quite complex. It requires a step back, review, and understanding to answer all the questions that we can do on a sustainable basis going forward. And we'll be willing to assist where we can, because we have demonstrated our capacity to do successful interventions in that instance. If you ask to do that, in this new vision that is envisaged, we have got a role to play, we will ensure that we play that role. So the point you make, Chair, that is something that we need to consider. The question of this funds from the RDC, you know, we're still very black on it. I think we have to go and check, because we don't have.
The researcher got the speech of the Minister of Finance with him there on the meeting. You can join.
Can you do a meeting?
No, Honourable Chairperson. In fact, there are two allocations that have been proposed currently. It's the one, 282 million for microfinance APEC fund, plus a 55 million for Kula Enterprises. Which has been currently been proposed, that the development fund from the DPSC has to be, I mean, there must be a common fund that would manage the three funds, so that we integrate the approach in accelerating development.
Maybe not respond now, but
I just want to check and make sure that this may not have been referring to the IDC, with whom I know and understand that they are looking to capacitate, I think it's Kula and the other entity in terms of microfinance, LIDT. So there are also a development financing issues. And I don't think it, it is for DDSL, nor am I aware where the minister said to me, here's the fact you must now manage and assist Kula. But I'm aware that the IDC is dealing with that component there.
Anybody has one?
Yeah, you have to go up from come. Look, sir. But you may respond from Treasury.
Thank you very much. Let me give clarity to this. I don't think this DVSA has been involved in this. What I know is that in the MTS 2010, it was actually proposed that there would be some restructuring of the SME institutions within the Economic Development Department. And IDC was given a task to lead the process. And all the transfers that were supposed to happen through the IDC. I'm aware of the 55 they're talking about regarding Kula, which is mainly for the Kula Direct. And also the, I'm not sure if I know the figure of the summer fund. But as we speak now, that money is actually sitting with the IDC. And it's managed through the IDC, not the TVA.
Thank you for that clarity. You might appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, I was saying that the TVSA just go and dig a little bit deeper and report that tomorrow. On this particular point that has been raised. If it is still the same as that, it's fine.
Okay.
So that we actually get this to the answer for us.
Okay. Yes. Chair, I think we will. I'm glad that the Treasury here has affirmed that it's not us. The Chair will come back and confirm that. Certainly where I'm sitting, I know that I've not received that because I would not. It has come to the DBSA. I'll receive the correspondence from the Ministry or the National Treasury directly, and I'll then delegate to the TNCD. But I will check and make sure that it is correct, correctly stated. Chair, the last item that we need to respond to, and the members can help me if I forget any other question, was the issue of integrated approach, particularly on matters such as the clean audit, etc. This is probably one of the weaknesses. The government totality of the delivery framework, the lack of coordination within the field of government has been a problem. Right up going to the national departments themselves, it's a known fact that we are not working coherently as a government, and that's kind of what like people are looking, government is looking to resolve that. Some strategies have been made. We've been assisting where we can in terms of streamlining that value going forward. That's integration at the macro level of government. Then there's integration at the micro level, which pertains to institutional activities that we give to a common base of clients, whether it is us with the IDC, whether it's us with other international organizations, whether it's us with COFTA or SAUGA. I think a significant attempt has been made to try and get that integration on the ground. In some instances, yes, we've had joint operations that have been successful. But I think part of what adds to the confusion is clearly there's still a huge fragmentation of work streams in government, and that needs to get attention. And capacity building is probably one typical example which everybody's focusing on. There are other methods that require coordination. And all of those things, to my knowledge, are being whipped at by the various mandated authorities who are supposed to look at them, whether it's SAUGA or whether it's the COFTA. Public works, they're all looking to say how do they better coordinate all of these interventions on the ground. And typically, as DBSA, if we are asked, underline that if we are asked to assist in any way, we make ourselves available. Yes, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Loy, for your presentation and your team that assisted you. The Minister, in his entree forward in the annual report, refers to DBSA becoming a center of excellence. excellent performance, you get excellent delivery. And that's something to strive for. Although excellence will get in heaven, it will be difficult on earth to get that. But thank you for that. The integrated approach, yes. That's where these committees and specific finance and appropriations come in. How are we going to do things differently to get a better performance outside? And if we can't succeed in that, we are failing. And we don't want failure. So that's the, that is our objective as a committee. That's why we engage with you as stakeholders. That's why that specific meeting tomorrow with the different legislators, chairpersons of committees of finance and local government here, with SAUDA, with the auditor general, with Treasury. How do we take this, this forward? All the members, point six on the agenda is just to take note that the response by the Minister of Finance on the recommendations made by the Standing and Select Committees for Finance Appropriations on the MTPBS Adjustment Appropriations Fiscal Framework and Division of Revenue, that response by the Minister was 80-seat. So we will have to get the date, Ms. Ventu, where this committee, and it was